Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are you legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We're live here on YouTube, ready to go, previewing all week 15 NFL action. A full game, a slate of 16 games here, Sam.
Yeah.
We already previewed tonight's game, 49ers and Seahawks, with Mina Kimes yesterday. Had a nice little discussion with Mina. Had some other philosophical discussions towards the end of the podcast, middle of the podcast, actually. Talking about our grades and subjectivity and objectivity and all that stuff. It feels like a good one to bookmark for a lot of the people that, you know, ask questions about the PFF grading process. We should do that. Bookmark that. So, yeah, that's great. And real quick, before we get into it, let's get into the next charity draft.
Yeah, so we're one game down. Look how quickly we can do this in a full 16.
One game is done. And then we're going to fly through the other 15. We got a hard out here.
Right.
Hard out.
For the first time ever. Somebody didn't realize that the end point in our podcast on the calendar is, you know, suggestion rather than.
Who schedules a meeting for the right after the 2 hour mark of our podcast?
Fools. Fools.
Fools.
Yeah. Latest charity. We have the GoFundMe up. It's on my pinned Twitter, my pinned tweet at PFF_Sam. Charity drive 8.0, rugby skills. You are going to be trying to replicate some rugby skills as shown to us by professional rugby players.
Who am I there? Because you were Randy Johnson.
Yeah. I don't know who that is. It appears to be Scottish, I believe,
looks like
based
me.
Off the uniform. But I didn't recognize who it was or the weird hair that he had. But it's you now. So you're going to try and replicate some rugby skills if we can raise money for Meals on Wheels America. GoFundMe's all set up there. The link will be in the description. Any donations are gratefully received. We as a collective, and by we I mean you, the great people that listen to the PFF NFL podcast, have raised upwards of $20,000, something like that, since we've been running these charity drives, $22,000 almost. So you guys are awesome. Let's keep it going with this one.
Yeah, this looks good. Nice, good Photoshop in there.
Thanks.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I really, you know, went over and above there.
So as I said, go check out the GoFundMe. We'll have that in the description below on YouTube. We'll also link it out, make that our pinned tweets and the whole deal on Twitter. So again, appreciate everybody for doing that. I'm going to tweet out the fact that we're live right now. Everybody get here, smash the thumbs up button, and let's get into it. As I said, yesterday's podcast, we talked 49ers and Seahawks. Now into the rest of the weekend's action. I did have this grand idea about island game weekend. This would be the weekend where you'd have the island games. One game Friday through Monday, nonstop, throughout the NFL. The NFL is like close to doing that this weekend, right? You got three games on Saturday and the whole deal.
They're certainly, dipping their toes into that water of, what if we just had NFL on all the time?
Yeah. What if you just didn't see your family for four straight days watching all the games?
Yeah.
And if you lose bets, you just keep doubling down. Mm-hmm. So Saturday, there's three games. Let's start with the biggest game on Saturday. Miami Dolphins at the Buffalo Bills. Saturday night, 8:15. Buffalo Bills favored by 7. And, of course, the storyline is Tua in the cold. He's never played in the cold. And he's got doesn't have the best velocity in the world. How's he going to handle the cold and the wind and the whole thing? It's going to be below freezing in Buffalo.
And potentially snow again. We might get our snow game. Did you see Who was it? Somebody dressed up in like a full parka under their uniform.
Was that
today?
Shaq Lawson?
Yes. Yeah. Shaq Lawson. I sent Tyler a picture of it. Maybe he'll be good enough to throw it on the screen here. But, you know, remember James Jones, who used to wear like a hoodie under his uniform?
This is the next this is next level.
The full parka. Yeah. Apparently it's only like 37 degrees or something, so it's a little bit over the top.
I think it's more of a style than I'm cold statement.
You think?
It's a style statement. I mean, it's not like Shaq Lawson hasn't been in Buffalo before.
You'd want to be pretty cold.
He's played most of his years there.
You'd want to be pretty cold to put that on.
I think it's style. Like somebody's going to rock like a mink coat under the jersey and be like, this is the next step.
The
here.
Joe Namath?
Yes.
Under the jersey?
Under the jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tucked down the pant leg.
I never forget I saw a guy with a Michael Vick jersey and a suit jacket before. You know, you could put anything under a suit jacket. Like that's what that taught me, that lesson. You could put anything under a jersey these days.
A jersey? Okay. We don't have time for this.
This is why we stay on, run. Getting off the rails already. Yeah. What are you looking for in this game besides Tua throwing the ball 10-plus yards down the field?
Well, the blueprint. The blueprint is out on the Miami Dolphins.
Real quick, have you been following the blueprint discussions with Ben Solak? Lou Riddick?
No.
Online?
What's going on?
It's basically, I think Ben is suggesting there is a blueprint out there. There's a certain way to...
That's a classic, by the way. That conversation, I haven't seen any of this, right? So who knows? But that conversation feels like it's leading to an inevitable, when did you play?
I don't think it's been that harsh. And I purposely try not to...
Because isn't
Twitter
it like the classic example of like former football guy, you know, player... angling for his GM job somewhere along the line, and Ben Solak, who's like 5'4", 112 pounds, eats cheese.
Just turned 13.
Yeah.
That whole deal.
It feels like it's inevitably going to end up with one of them being like, well, look, back when I played, this is how we did it.
And we joke with Ben, you know, friend of the show, guest on the show. Mm. He's really good. He's a good analyst. He knows the game. So Ben has suggested there's some blueprinty, you know, stuff on tape, as I suggested the other day, even though I don't like to go down that path too much. And I believe Lou came back with press coverage has been in the NFL forever, right? That's how I played in the 90s for Belichick. That's how we played. Nick Saban taught us how to do that. I think the nuanced somewhere in the middle approach is it's not that like the coverages are new or the concepts are new. It's against this offense, disruption at the line of scrimmage, throwing the timing off a little bit for an offense that has thrown the ball down the field 10-plus yards more than any offense in the NFL. This is a style that they haven't shown that they can adjust to yet, right? It's not that you've spooled up new plays that the NFL's never seen before. It's that you're using plays defensively, coverages defensively, that the Dolphins haven't shown that they can attack properly
yet. I don't, a blueprint to stop a team doesn't have to be a new thing that got invented. It's a little bit of
press coverage and disruption. It's a little bit of crowding the middle of the field, forcing the ball outside. And honestly, that's a strategy that teams used to use against Chad Pennington, right? Chad Pennington, he doesn't have a big arm, right? Force him to throw those outside the window, outside the numbers types of passes, right? We've seen good offenses who attack the middle of the field, even the Patriots in the Brady days, where they attacked the middle so much, you'd have teams try to force them outside the numbers. I think that's a big part of what's happening here with the Dolphins.
Right. I don't think you need to invent a new form of defense to combat something that's taking the league by storm if you figure out something that's old that works. Like, it might actually be going back way into the history archives to find something that you haven't used for ages but has existed for years because that's the thing that might work against an offense. Anyway, I think it's entirely true that there is something of a blueprint now to stopping this Miami offense in a way there wasn't earlier in the season. I also think, therefore, it's a fascinating matchup of how much of that are Buffalo going to do. I think they're usually reasonable defending the middle of the field anyway. And number two, what is the counter? Can Mike McDaniel pivot the offense to counter more of that? And specifically then, can Tua execute that? Because that's the different element. I think they started to do a little bit of the counter stuff on offense, and Tua kept trying to fire the ball into the middle.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think a lot of it is just throwing the timing and rhythm off a little bit, right? How many times, when you describe Tua and his skill set, it's, you know, quick release and quick-minded, and he gets through his progressions and all that stuff. But just like I go back on my Jimmy G comp there, there's always a handful of plays a game where if that's not there, right? If that first instantaneous read isn't there and there's a little bit of hesitation, does that throw the whole thing off? I know that does it for a lot of quarterbacks, but Tua in particular – And so the Bills will look to disrupt. The Bills aren't as effective maybe in coverage as they've been in the past. They're about middle of the pack on 10-plus yard throws, completion percentage on 10-plus yard throws. Tre'Davious White still kind of just finding his feet coming back the last couple weeks, but it's always been a good, sound coverage unit. So that side of the ball, I think, is going to be an interesting one, Bills and Dolphins here.
Mm-hmm.
So 7 points for the Bills. Is that too much? And what happens on the other side of the ball?
I think it is. You know, a couple of weeks ago before the blueprint was discovered, like, this was a really close game, I think. Okay, the blueprint is there. I still think there's enough time now for Miami to figure out what the counter is. But the other element is, like, Josh Allen's turnovers or turnover-type plays have still been there. Okay, last week was relatively clean in the bad weather, but the production wasn't there in the bad weather either. So I don't know if Buffalo's going to run away with this the way they might have done in the right sort of sequence of weeks this season. Like, the last time he played Miami, that was 6 turnover-worthy plays or something insane from Josh Allen, or was it 4? Huge volume of turnover-worthy plays from Allen the first time they played. I think this might end up being pretty close, even if Buffalo does a good job against that Miami offense.
I love the fact that it was like 100-plus degrees. You talk about the heat that the Bills played in the first matchup in September. It's going to be the complete opposite here. I do think that the home field advantage does favor the home team, the Bills. When you talk about the cold and the wind and the whole thing, is it overrated sometimes at draft time when you're talking about arm strength and everything? Maybe. But there are certain games where it shows up. And Allen and Tua on the other ends of the spectrum when it comes to just pure velocity and the whole thing, it doesn't mean Tua's not going to be able to complete a pass or anything like that.
That's what it sounds like.
But I do think it's going
to
be a factor.
What do we got? According to the PFF app that has weather information in it, 28 degrees Fahrenheit, 14 miles an hour winds, and snow.
I just hope there's snow at the game.
Always.
You know, during the game.
Always hope there's snow.
So it's one of the games of the week. It's Saturday night.
Do you know what the stadium is called now?
No.
Highmark Stadium.
Did not know that, no.
Same.
Did they decide they're building a dome or it's going to stay outside?
It's going to still be outside, I believe.
Yeah, you need an outdoor stadium there.
Yeah.
Because this is an advantage, right? If this was in a dome in December, you lose the advantage of having laser-armed Josh Allen. The game where the Patriots threw the ball 3 times, yeah, it was like 50-mile-an-hour winds. Josh Allen definitely threw some passes that were like curveballs and flying all over the place. He had other ones that legitimately cut the wind and got to where they needed to go.
Well, also,
right? That is an advantage. The other team couldn't throw the ball once, complete a pass, and the Bills could. Those extremes do matter a little.
Also, you have a quarterback that can drop back on 3rd and 15 and then just decide to go nuts, run through your defense, and leap over 3 defenders for the last 3 yards.
Yeah, that's like weather agnostic.
Most other people don't. Well, yeah. No, it's not even weather agnostic. The point being, you can still do that in the crappy weather and the wind where you can't throw. Tua probably can't. Mac Jones can't. Like, you have an advantage because you have a super freak, a quarterback, in those situations.
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking for. I think it's another I always talk about it. A couple weeks ago, you know, you had the games off for Josh Allen. Those, mm-hmm. Let's hand it off a few more times. That's not this. This is number one seeds on the line, divisions on the line. Much like last year when the division was on the line, Josh Allen and the Bills in New England, and he just took over as a runner, as a passer. I think that's what we see here Saturday night in Buffalo. I'll take the Bills. First instinct, I went Bills.
Taking Miami to keep it closer than 7.
You're taking Miami to mm-hmm. keep it closer than 7. Okay. Can't maneuver my spreadsheet here very well. Transitions are really smooth all the way across the board.
It's a good update.
You know who I would keep close is Western and Southern.
You can't even transition.
I caught it. I captured it. Because if you started from that point, it would look smooth.
You sure?
The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. And don't we need that? Don't we need to feel rest assured? Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com. Yeah, the words didn't all make sense in a row there, but
no.
We'd all like to be to forget it. You should be rest assured.
I'd like to apologize to the great people at Western and Southern who make the entire thing possible, power the studio, turn the lights on, all those kinds of things, for the butchery that just occurred.
Just go to westernsouthern.com/PFF because it is our friends at Western and Southern who do keep the lights on here in the studio, or else we'd be sitting here in the dark.
Hmm.
Detroit Lions at the New York Jets. Jets by one.
Yeah. It's a fascinating matchup. The everybody's favorite team right now, the Detroit Lions.
Everyone's favorite team.
Flying. Vegas loves them. They loved them last week. Turns out they were right.
I don't have the time to do this kind of research, but there's always a team. Somewhere between weeks 10 and 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always a team that gets super hyped up. Somewhere in that range, right? Started slow. Like maybe it was the Commanders when they were the football team in 2020, right? They went on a run. Nobody wants to see the Commanders in the playoffs. Nobody wants to see them because they beat the Steelers and they beat some other good teams in 2020. Nobody wants to see the Lions is on like the top of it. You know, it's every story. And I'm not saying it's not true, but they're the team right now. They're hot. And they're still underdogs to the Jets. They were favored against the Vikings. Underdogs to the Jets in New York here.
Only just, though. Like 1 point underdogs.
1 point, I know. It's close.
On the road.
I got it.
Which, again, you know, this world of home field advantage not being what it used to be, that's kind of Vegas thinking Detroit's probably the better team.
Is it really not what it used to be still, or are you just
citing
stuff from
2020? It used to be 3 points. It's down to at least two, maybe 1.5 now.
Gotcha.
So Vegas thinks the Lions are better than the Jets marginally here.
Quinnen Williams has a calf injury, did not practice Wednesday. His status is up in the air. Could be a big one here for the Jets.
Yeah, that's huge because there's been a lot of debate this week about just how good this Detroit offensive line is. They have a lot of metrics that they don't show particularly well in, but they've been top 10 in PFF's offensive line rankings all season long. They have very good tackles. The interior has been a bit of a mess. They've been a revolving door of guys almost never getting their starting trio playing at the same time. But the offensive scheme protects them very well and kind of mitigates a lot of the issues. So Quinnen Williams is the kind of guy, though, that can disrupt that, make a mess of it. You know, when you've got three interior guys that aren't always the guys you want, you know, Williams is playing as well as any interior pass rusher in the league this season. If they have him, that's a big ability for the Jets defensive line to make a mess of this Detroit offensive line. Generally, it's an interesting matchup anyway. Like, the Jets have one of the best pass rushers in the league, one of the best front fours. As I said, Detroit's offensive line may not be amazing individually, but collectively, and when you fold in the scheme, it works pretty well. But that's the kind of area where if the Jets are going to win this game, it's by winning that particular matchup.
How about the Lions now with their receiving core back at full strength for the first time all season, going up against those Jets cornerbacks? We just did a PFF NFL Daily today on Sauce Gardner,
mm-hmm.
posing the question, is he not just Defensive Rookie of the Year, but maybe the best corner in the NFL right now?
Yeah.
We went that far to at least embrace debate there. But yeah, I think that matchup with the Lions receivers and how well they've played, just the Amon-Ra St. Brown has been uncoverable the last few weeks. DJ Chark, always been a guy that shows flashes as a deep threat over the last couple of years. And then Jameson Williams being sprinkled into the mix. Nice little battle there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how quickly they scale up Jameson Williams' involvement. He played like 6 snaps, I think, the first week, 8 snaps the second week. Just had, you know, the deep touchdown, which made it kind of look that he was, I think, more heavily involved.
He's playing the Khalif Raymond role, even though Khalif Raymond is still there, right?
Yeah.
Designated deep threat here and there.
It's like how much can you tell from 8 snaps? When you watch his snaps, like, he looks live. Like, he looks like a guy that's going to make an impact and make a real difference in his a live wire just moving around the field. So, yeah, like, if he's good to go, let's start scaling this up. Let's see more than 8 snaps from him in a given week, because I think Sauce Gardner has the ability to pretty easily just eliminate DJ Chark from the game. You know, Chark's specialty is running deep down the sideline with his speed. I mean, Sauce is just going to erase that if he gets his hands on him. Jameson Williams, though, I think is a different kettle of fish, because he's just so much more sudden. Like, you can see it visibly how much more of a problem he is when he sticks his foot in the ground and changes direction.
I believe there were some Sauce versus Jameson Williams plays in the college football playoff last year, right? There was there was a couple of those plays that popped mm-hmm. in favor of Sauce Gardner.
Yeah.
As far as, like, oh, he's running with or, you know, competing with this guy that we think
is going to be a speed
first rounder.
Yeah.
So, that's something to keep an eye on there. Then Mike White's questionable with his ribs and the whole thing. Zach Wilson's been elevated to QB2.
Yes.
Right?
Which is basically Joe Flacco being put out to pasture.
So my question, would Zach Wilson benefit from the Baker Mayfield treatment? You know, just
don't give him the playbook.
Yeah,
he's already got the playbook though.
Nah, I give him the game plan on Friday or something like that.
Yeah,
Saturday night. Hey, kid, you're starting tomorrow. Don't think about it. Just go. Just go play instinctually. Don't overthink it. But there could be a point if, man, I can't imagine playing with busted ribs.
I can imagine playing with them. Yeah, I can't imagine then taking a hit with busted ribs.
So I'm saying like Zach Wilson, everybody's one hit away, but Zach Wilson's maybe like even a light hit away from being in there. If we do see Zach Wilson in a backup role, I wonder if that actually might be better for him. Like he just goes in and, you know, plays a little bit, you know, cleaner brand of football, quicker brand of football. That's just something to keep an eye on with Mike White and his injury.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it would hurt for Zach Wilson's play to be thrown in there last second. Like, it's not going to make him worse than he was when he was starting. It, you know, if anything, it would help the complete lack of, like, expectation and just, all right, you need it and you go. So, yeah, but I think either way, it's going to be a step down from what Mike White has shown.
So, again, the Lions offensively, just a fascinating team because they've where are they in points? Fifth most points in the NFL. And, you know, they started out really hot, had a bit of a lull in the middle of the season against the Patriots, against the Cowboys, against the Packers where they didn't score, but they're back to scoring again. Are they a team that's just going to run into a good Jets defense and that's going to go away, or are they going to be able to replicate this again?
I think it's a big test this week because last week we talked about how much like Ben Johnson just owned Ed Donatell, the Vikings defensive coordinator. The Lions offensive coordinator owned the Vikings defensive coordinator basically every step of the way. Like every single play, it looked like he'd already set it up earlier and was hitting him with the counter, and it was just the whole way he was ahead. Now you get to see what happens when he goes up against Robert Saleh's defense, which is a really high-end defense with an elite pass rush, with elite corners on the back end. Like, this is the kind of defense that can test your offensive success.
All right, well, I made my picks hours ago. I went first instinct Detroit. It is one of those where the more I talk about it, I like the Jets. So I'm sticking with Detroit as the one-point underdogs.
Right, I am going with the Jets. I think they win by more than one.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
Yeah, that's what happens when you pick them. That's what you're predicting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, somewhat game of the week, Cincinnati Bengals at the Tampa Bay Bucks. Bengals favored by 3.5 here. Bengals, one of the hottest teams in the NFL. They're up to, 9-4? And, you know, they're a game out between behind the Bills and the Chiefs as far as that number one seed goes. They are tied with the Ravens at the top of the AFC North. Bucks are also a first-place team in the NFC South at 6-7. Big stories this week. You've got Tom Brady versus Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow's most common comp is Tom Brady. Cool under pressure.
Is it?
The whole deal. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are, our friend like Paul Daner is writing stories. They're asking him about it.
Okay.
Just because he's good. He's young. He's clutch at the end of games, that type of thing.
He's good.
Cool under pressure.
Yeah. Okay.
What are you looking for in this one?
I mean, God, it doesn't look good for the Bucks. There's no signs of this thing coming together. Like, you know, go back a month, maybe more, and we were saying, look, it looks bad, but the good news is they're going to have an awful lot of time to get it together because the rest of the division stinks and they can probably win with a terrible record and still make the playoffs. But at some point, you want to see evidence that there's any chance of that happening, and there's no evidence of that happening. Like, the offensive line isn't playing any better. The receivers aren't playing any better. They can't manage to time plays where everybody does their job without somebody screwing up and getting called for holding or pass interference or whatever the hell it is. Brady, he's not playing badly, but he's just not, you know, he's not playing well enough to elevate everything else around him. I don't know.
I mean, it's one of his worst seasons in addition to everything else falling apart around him, too.
Yeah.
That all adds up to
I also
it's just
don't
not
know,
a good offense.
I don't know how well his shtick plays when everything's going badly. Like, do you see the sort of clips of him just screaming at people on the sideline? It's like, we got to play better. This isn't good enough to win. This is good enough to get our asses kicked, blah, blah, blah. It's like, all right, you know, you can do that for a game or two because it's Tom Brady. Like, he knows what it takes to win. But when you're just – it's week after week after week and he's just getting more and more frustrated, like, at what point do you stop buying into that? And you're like, look, just stop yelling at me. Like, I'm trying as well. It's not working. It's not my fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean – It's good Bengals defense. They do a really nice job scheming it up. I mean, that when you're watching the Bucks offense, it does feel like they just don't have pass concepts to beat coverages. Anyway. I mean, it's really what it is, right? I mean, every single week, it is tight window throws. There's nothing easy. There's very few just like, oh, there's a free 30-yard gain that was schemed up, or where a playmaker just took over, or whatever it might be. There's nothing easy. And when there is something easy, like, oh, there's a busted coverage, like you said, there's a holding penalty, or it gets dropped, or whatever it is. That has been the Bucs season. I don't know what the answer to that is, right? It's one of those things where the offense is not good, and then on top of that, when they do something good, one guy's screwing it up, like you said. That's not like a thing that you fix, necessarily. It's just, you know, try not to time it up so badly, guys. So I don't know what the answers are for the Bucs offense, other than maybe, you know, home game. They have a chance here. Who knows? Trey Hendrickson's banged up, though, for the Bengals. And they've, you know, underrated story, too, is the turnover Cincinnati's had in their secondary. And they've been able to keep it together defensively. They've done a really nice job over the last few weeks beating the Titans, holding the Chiefs to 24, beating the Browns despite injuries in their secondary.
Yeah, I think the Bengals' defensive line, even without Trey Hendrickson, is not a great matchup for Tampa Bay's offensive line. I just think that side of the ball, it's going to be another ugly, low-scoring game for Tampa Bay. The question becomes, can their defense, which is pretty inconsistent, can it have one of the games where it actually shows up and makes life difficult for Joe Burrow and the Bengals, or are they just going to get whooped?
Yeah. DJ Reader, we talked about how well he's playing. I mean, just if the Browns, who have a decent running game, the good running game, the Browns couldn't do anything, and DJ Reader was legitimately single-handedly blowing up every single run play, assuming he'll be able to do that same thing against this Bucks offensive line as well.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think it's on the Bucks defense, right? They didn't play a great game against San Francisco. They've had these absolute duds of games, San Francisco or Kansas City, where they couldn't make a stop, do anything, and those are good offenses that they're playing. So could be another game where the, you know, Bengals dominate, or if the Bucks defense keeps it close, you're just kind of hoping, okay, you give Brady a chance for some of that late magic at the end. I mean, that's pretty much how they've won their last couple, or at least a couple of their games this year.
It comes down, I think this game is more important for the Tampa Bay defense than the offense. Like, I don't expect the offense to have a particularly good game. So if they're going to have any shot of this, they need their defense to show up, and it's banged up, it's not 100% healthy, and it's wildly inconsistent between, like, really good games where they do show up and shut down the opposition and games where they just can't stop anything. So, like, it feels like this game is either razor thin, at which point Tom Brady in a razor thin game, anything can happen, or the Bucks are just getting their ass kicked again.
Which way are you leaning on that?
More the latter. I just think this is a bad matchup across the board for them, and Cincinnati's on fire right now.
Bengals injuries to keep an eye on. Tyler Boyd was a limited receiver, of course. T. Higgins has the hamstring. He was limited.
And, of course, it's much harder to defend them when they only have one receiver, according to the Browns DB's coach.
Weird quote. I don't understand that. Trey Hendrickson had like a broken wrist that he might play through or something like that, right? Is it completely broken?
Look, you strap it up, make it into a club, you're good.
I love a good club. Got to have the club. But Trey Hendrickson and then Mike Hilton also not playing. So potentially all those injuries could add up here for the Bengals. That feels like Hayden Hurst almost certainly not going to play as well, the tight end. So, you know, that'd be like your one glimmer of hope, maybe, if you're the Bucs. And then here's the one other thing about the Bucs. It's still Mike Evans and Tom Brady, right? It's still Chris Godwin. Like, the names are still there. At what point do the names in the on-field production start to match? Is there a point where Chris Godwin just looks better coming off his ACL? Is there a point where Julio Jones can look as, you know, explosive as he did in just training camp just a couple months ago? Mike Evans and Tom Brady, can they just be on the same page for a game? So, to me, it could happen any week, but we've been saying that now for 10 straight weeks.
Yeah.
For the Bucs.
At which point, I'm kind of done predicting it.
So you're done. You're out.
I mean, I'm just not expecting it to happen. If it happens, it happens, but I'm no longer saying, you know, at some point this is going to come together, because it hasn't.
All right, my first instinct said Bucs home dogs here. I'll take them +3.5. You're taking?
The Bengals.
The Bengals to cover. All right, we got four games done.
Mm-hmm. And we differ on all of them, so I'm happy.
Oh, yeah, it's good for you. That's a good start for you. You haven't even picked some of them. You were waiting for me to put my picks in.
No, the ones that I haven't picked yet are the ones where I didn't have a strong feeling about it, and the more we talk it out, I'll figure it out at the end.
I like that. Sunday Night Football, we got a game that was flexed in thanks to Patriots and Raiders being flexed out. It's the New York Giants at the Washington Commanders, a battle for, it's got to be only a wild card spot at this point in the NFC, but the Commanders and Giants, both 7-5-1. The tie was against each other just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So 4.5-point spread, despite the last time these teams played a week ago, effectively, two weeks ago. It was a tie.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Was this Washington's, did they not play last week again?
They had a bye.
Yeah, so Washington, this is happening more than ever. Washington is going to now effectively play back-to-back games against the Giants. Wasn't that the Browns-Ravens a couple years ago? The Browns had back-to-back. Hate that, Sam. Hate it.
Okay.
There's literally billions of options for schedules. Millions, at least.
Uh-huh.
Millions of scheduling options. And you just sign off on the one. We're like, sure, these two division teams, yeah, the Commanders back-to-back games against the Giants. There's no other options here.
This is like that thing where, you do the schedule, you put it in the Giants spreadsheet week by week, and then you're like, somebody check this. And everyone's like, yeah, it looks good to me. Nobody's going in and finding out that the Washington and the Giants play each other. Like, it's two consecutive games for Washington if you factor in the bye, Chief. It's like, nobody checked that. Nobody cares.
I care.
Yeah, except you.
I care.
Yeah.
So Washington's coming off their bye. We last saw them against these New York Giants. But what's happened since then? Well, the Giants got wrecked by the Eagles last week. I think that's the difference, right? It was a tie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But there's more data here that the Giants are less for real than maybe people thought 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I think we probably knew the Giants weren't as good as the Eagles.
Yeah, I know that. I know. But the Eagles, really, really dominated.
Yeah.
Plus, the Giants keep dealing with their injuries.
Yeah, they do. Giants have got a lot of injuries. Doesn't seem to affect the way they play the game, though, weirdly. A lot of teams that were hyper-aggressive might dial it back.
As in blitz like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the Giants. Let's just keep going.
What are you looking for in this one? Leonard Williams, limited at Wednesday's practice. We mentioned on the Monday show. Sometimes I ask you a question and don't let you answer.
I
understand that's very, very rude, and I apologize for that. But Leonard Williams, I had to mention, limited participant. He's questionable with a neck injury. Kind of need him.
The Taylor Heinicke thing is just fascinating. He now has 14 turnover-worthy plays in the season and 5 interceptions. The last time they played, he had 2 turnover-worthy plays and no interceptions.
Did we figure out who that email was from?
What email?
The email question in our Heinicke grade.
No.
Somebody, it wasn't somebody
The guy
office.
That claimed he was working for Washington or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't really working for Washington.
I don't think so. But if it was... You know better.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Don't bring it to me.
Pretty sure it was a fan.
You know he's not that good.
Yeah.
He knows he's not that good. Don't whinge at me.
There's also a weird list of PFFers that he tagged in the email.
Yeah, a lot of suspicious parts of that email. But anyway, the point being, Taylor Heinicke has a grade of 49 for the season, 48 as a passer, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And, it looks good from that point of view, but it isn't. You watch him play, it isn't good. Sometimes he seems to be getting bailed out by Terry McLaurin turning into Superman. But I'm just waiting for the game where there's 3 interceptions in there because finally the luck swings against him, right? And the 2 he puts in harm's way get turned over, and then a bonus 3rd one, the ricochets off the hands of his receivers or something just to pay him back for the last 7 weeks of good luck he's had. Yeah. I'm waiting for that game. It feels like we're long overdue. And with the Giants' crazy-ass blitzing, maybe it's this week.
And there is something to the Heinicke style that if the game is close enough at the end, you'll pull off some wins, right? That's how they beat the Colts late. He's making some plays down the field. That's how they kept it close enough with the Vikings. There's a couple of those, some of that late-game magic that in Heinicke, even just they were down 7, makes that great play on 4th-and-4 to – essentially save the tie for the save the game so that they could eventually tie the Giants. There's something to his aggressiveness in crunch time, but yes, the snap for snap efficiency from Heinicke is not great.
Yeah.
What are you predicting here, a tie?
No, but I think the Giants keep it closer than 4.5. It feels like a field goal game either way. Again, why wouldn't it be?
Man, I don't know. If Leonard Williams is hurt, so the Giants' run defense last week absolutely gashed. And I know it was the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But that makes me think, you know, that's Washington's game, you know, with Brian Robinson and what they want to do in the run game. And I think they'll be able to. I just like that matchup for Washington. And I like Commanders' pass rush against the Giants. Both of the Giants, their entire offensive line got wrecked last week, too. Again, I'm trying not to overrate the fact that the Eagles are better than the Giants at everything.
A lot better.
And looked better at everything. And that's the last thing that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. I like the way the Commanders are trending a little bit more than the Giants. 4.5 does seem like a big number, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I took the Commanders hours ago. We'll stick with that.
Sure. How bad could I be?
How bad could I be?
No worse than your regular picking.
All right, let's do one more game here. Then we'll talk about our friends over at Prize Picks. Tennessee Titans at the Los Angeles Chargers. Chargers favored by 3 here in the Dome. Chargers coming off of a big win against the Dolphins on Sunday Night Football. Can they do it again against the Titans? Titans going the other way right now. Still have a 2-game lead in the AFC South despite a 3-game losing streak.
Yep.
Is this the game that the Titans get back on track, right? They should be able to run against the Chargers.
So, yeah, you say that, and yet...
I do say that.
You do. It's weakness against weakness. The Chargers are the worst team in the NFL, allowing yards against the run on average. The Titans are the worst team in the NFL at generating yards before contact on average. So any rushing success that they've had this season, essentially, has been Derrick Henry. The offensive line has not held up its end of the bargain generally. Now, obviously, on a play-by-play basis, that can be different, right? If they have one play where they all show up and do their job, Derrick Henry can go for 80 yards. But generally, this offensive line has been bad at opening up holes and generating space for Derrick Henry to get him going. But the Chargers are the worst team in the NFL against the run again. So it is an interesting battle of bad on bad. The one sort of factor that can break in the tiebreaker there is Derrick Henry. Like, if it's still a stalemate, but because the Chargers stink, it's, you know, somewhere in Tennessee's favor slightly, like, Derrick Henry can take those plays and make something big happen. So I don't think that they're going to go nuts running on them, but I think that, you know, they could go for a decent amount because of Derrick Henry.
Yeah, very similar yards after contact numbers. So he's at like 3.7 or so yards after contact. Back in 2020 when he ran for over 2,000 yards, including the playoffs, Henry was at 3.9. I mean, it's close, but he was almost a yard per attempt higher that year, 5.2, right? So you're getting more, as you always like to say, that, you know, that head start, right? That if you give it to Derrick Henry at 250 pounds with speed, his head start's probably more valuable than others.
Yes.
Right? Anybody with speed, a head start's good. But Henry gets a head start into space or into a defender that he can just run over. So there's definitely something to that. The Chargers' run defense is interesting, too. It's kind of like the way we looked at the Bengals' offense last year. Were they a bad run defense every single down? No. But there was so many big plays, right? There's so many 50-yarders and 40-yarders in there against this Chargers' defense. Was that just inevitably going to get better? It's really difficult to give up a 50-yard run every single week if you're the Chargers. So are they getting better in recent weeks just because, you know, natural regression there? So it does look like a favorable matchup to Tennessee, but from a Chargers perspective, it also looks like, hey, this could be our time to actually get better from a run defense standpoint because Tennessee is struggling up front.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is a game where the Chargers have flashed the ability to still be a contender even with all the injuries that they've had. Justin Herbert has the capacity to play extremely well. I think it's a different offense when they have Mike Williams in there. They can make a ton of big plays. Tennessee has a very good defense, so it's going to be difficult. But it feels like Tennessee's offense might be able to get something going against the Chargers' run defense. And then, you know, it comes down to whether Justin Herbert can execute that kind of game plan again and have success against Tennessee's D.
All right, what's at stake here? Well, as I mentioned, the Titans are 2 games up on the Jaguars. Jaguars have the Cowboys this week, which could, you know, if they come out of the, if they, both teams lose, it's a 2-game deficit with 3 games to go.
One of which is against Tennessee.
And they're right, but like the Jags are trying to they want to be able to win and get in at least by week 18 against the Titans. So every game is crucial here as far as the division goes. And then just in the AFC, the Chargers, where are they, 7-6? 7-6, just technically outside the playoff picture behind the Patriots right now. Patriots are winning the tiebreaker. They have the 7 seed at the moment. It's the Patriots, Chargers, and Jets all tied at 7-6 right now. So every game is crucial. You know, could be a potential playoff matchup at some point down the line. So it's a good matchup, man. Titans and Chargers, but Titans are starting, you know, they're not looking good. The three-game losing streak, I like the way the Chargers are trending, in part because Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, getting the passing attack back on track. I will take the Chargers here.
And you took the opposite. I took Tennessee.
Just because you saw me put Chargers into the spreadsheet.
No,
I don't believe so.
Oh, gosh. I am closed my spreadsheet now. What? Accidentally pressed the X. I was trying to open it, and I pressed the X. It's just a masterclass.
Mm-hmm. Masterclass on hosting, something.
On hosting podcasts. Well, let's tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. I have it.
Good.
They do some really cool stuff. Tell everybody about Prize Picks. Look at that. We got it right up on the screen.
They do. Awesome way of playing DFS for pretty much any league or sport you can think of. Obviously, the NFL is where we're focused on. You just go through, build your little slate, take what you think will be a guy getting more or less than his projected total, and then build yourself a little card going. And because of the way they do it, you don't even need to get all of them right necessarily, depending on the way you choose to make the pick.
All right, so you pick the 2 to 5 players, like Sam is saying, and if they, you know, project if they're going to score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money on any entry, and you're not competing against anyone else. It's just you versus the projections available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch, which includes, listen to this, NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, men's college basketball, women's college basketball, soccer, WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, disc golf, Euro basketball, cricket, and more. I might get in on the MMA Prize Picks.
Oh, now you're an expert. Yeah.
As an expert. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy, and that's also why I might do it. Nice and easy and quick. It's safe and fast withdrawals, and we're currently operational in over 30 states in the entire country of Canada. So you download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code PFF1. So with PFF1, you deposit $100, you get $100. You deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code PFF1 at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns. This is your second game on Saturday. Browns are favored by 2.5. Another game where it's supposed to be cold. Cleveland weather.
Yeah. I mean, it's cold this week. If you're outside anywhere December, in the Northeast.
December weather
it's
here.
It's going to be cold.
What are you looking for in this one?
I mean, obviously the most fascinating thing about the Browns every week is going to be how long does this rust for Deshaun Watson actually last?
For sure.
Like he played like crap the first week. Flashes of better play last week, but still wasn't good. Is this a step in the right direction, or are we just going to get that again? Like, is that going to last all season long and leave the Browns kind of yearning for Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, at least until next year? Or are we actually going to see some kind of development here?
All while Amari Cooper, questionable. He's got interesting designation, rest/hip was his non-participating status in Wednesday's practice. I don't understand both. Right, it's kind of like we wanted to give him rest, and he's also got a hip injury.
Yeah,
is that, I mean, look, that's fair.
You got a hip injury, you need to rest it.
Okay, I mean, it's more likely the hip than the rest. David Bell with a thumb injury, and then David Njoku with a knee, all questionable for this game. So that's my biggest question too, man. Like, what does Deshaun Watson look like for the rest of the season here? The Browns, I believe their playoff hopes are very much diminished, right? They're one of four teams that are 5-8. Jaguars, Raiders, Browns, and Steelers.
But they don't have the benefit of a crappy division.
I was about to say, like, we could talk about the Jaguars as a playoff hopeful because they're just two games back in the division. The Browns do not have such luck, nor do the Steelers at 5-8. So it's more of a battle to not be last in the AFC North.
Yeah, or a battle to be last, depending on how you value draft picks.
Depending on your perspective.
We should get Tyler Huntley at least, which I think is significant. You know, if they lost him as well, and then we're down to third string, we would have major problems, I think, for Baltimore. But Tyler Huntley, we've seen before, can operate this offense to a capable level. Ronnie Stanley playing, albeit banged up, I think has the ability to do a decent job on Myles Garrett. All of a sudden, Jadeveon Clowney had a random amazing game where he had a ton of pressure, 90 pass rushing grade. That's such a difference for the Cleveland. If they have anybody else have a huge game along with Myles Garrett, they're just such a different proposition to stop up front.
Yeah, as bad as the Browns defense had been for most of the season, they've shown glimmers of hope in recent weeks. Now, they played the Bucs, the Texans.
Yeah.
Those are easier offenses to play this season. But they, you know, hung tough against the Bengals. You had a busted coverage on the flea flicker and all that stuff. But, yeah, Clowney and Garrett were fantastic in that game. It was the best pass rush grade of the season since week one for the Browns. So I think that's, you know, something to keep an eye on here. If the Browns can get some pressure on Huntley up front. And then the Ravens run game, J.K. Dobbins and what he did last week, just really good, really effective on the run. In the run game, again, without Lamar. As you know, Huntley does run the same concepts, as we've said, doesn't have the same dynamic playmaking ability, but the Ravens are able to run their offense. They should have some effect, should be effective running the ball against this Browns defensive front, at least the defensive interior. I'll say that every single week because they struggle. They're so bad. I expect the Browns to be able to run the ball. Then it's a matter of, can Huntley do enough in the pass game? Because they haven't put a ton of points on the board with him under center here.
No, they haven't. I mean, he didn't have a good game last week, even before getting hurt. It wasn't like it looked last season where he, I think, deputized pretty well for Lamar. So it might be a grind for Baltimore, but I still think, given the performance we're getting from Deshaun Watson right now, they're still a better bet.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. I'm going to take the Ravens. I think they're, you know, they're going to be able to run the ball effectively against this Cleveland front. But it's kind of like the same thing. We don't know when Watson randomly starts looking good again and how that changes the dynamic of the Browns. Let's say not this week, though. I'll take the Ravens to cover the 2.5. Is that where you're going?
Yep.
All right, Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints. Saints by 4. Marcus Mariota, I believe he was benched.
Yeah.
For Desmond Ridder, and then he's having season-ending surgery on top of that. I don't
yes,
think
he is.
It did kind of happen in that order.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it was very much a case of, oh, you're benching me? Well, in which case, I'm going to go get this taken care of now, since there's no reason not to. See ya. Arthur Smith was basically like, look, I'm no doctor, but this was not something that was keeping him out of games. You know, I can't tell him not to have the surgery, but, you know, there's no reason he should be having it now, other than he's not tremendously interested in not having it, as long as he's not the starting quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, interesting dynamic.
5-8 Falcons. This is what we had called for a few weeks back. It did seem like Mariota was running out of chances. I mean, my biggest question is, how does the offense change? I know you keep citing Ridder's athleticism and how he ran the ball, or how he ran at the combine and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think you're trying, like, they were running that offense in Atlanta because they were like, here's this body of work that Mariota's brought to the table. Average to below average passer historically. Let's lean into his rushing ability here. I'm assuming the Falcons aren't going to try to do that with Ridder, right? They're going to try to let him run a probably more conventional offense.
I wouldn't change the offense one iota. I think that Desmond Ridder has enough athleticism to still execute the offense as it currently stands and threaten defenses in a similar way. Like, he might not be as dynamic a rusher as Marcus Mariota, but he's good enough that he can still stress the various elements of a defense that need to think about him and a running back and a receiver at the same time and cause them problems. And then I think where you gain is he'll probably be a more efficient passer off the back of it. So I wouldn't undo what is working with the offense and try and, you know, frame a more conventional passing system around Desmond Ridder. I would just say, this is the offense we're running. Show me what you can do.
Preseason, Desmond Ridder had you know, some really good flashes. He had a 92 grade in one game against the Jets, average grades in a couple other games. But even the games where the stats weren't as good, he had some nice throws in there. He had two big-time throws in his final game, had a couple picks in there as well. But there was a lot to like just in preseason action from Desmond Ridder. I guess where I disagree with you is I think they want to know what they have in Ridder as a passer. I really believe that the Falcons ran their offense this year because they were trying to make do with what they had in Mariota. I think they want to be a little bit more conventional with Ritter. Let him read it out, throw the ball. He'll run when he needs to and the whole thing. But they're trying to figure out what they have in the last few weeks with him as a passer and if he's the guy to go, you know, to build around going forward.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I mean, you know, the offense works pretty well with a quarterback that can't pass right now. They're 13th in the NFL in EPA per play on offense with a quarterback that's played his way to the bench. So what happens if you simply take that offense and increase the passing efficiency by having a guy that doesn't stink throwing the football? Like, you could propel yourself into the top 10, who knows how far, but at that point you're not going, man, we really don't know what we have in Desmond Ridder as a conventional drop-back passing quarterback. It's like, well, yeah, but who gives a crap? You know that you have a guy that can execute a top 10 offense, even if it's relying on his athleticism a bit. Like, I don't see the point.
Well, we'll see.
It's like, what would happen if you just took away Jalen Hurts' rushing ability? I'm not saying Ridder is Jalen Hurts, but what I'm saying is if that offense propels him to this kind of level, who cares what it looks like in a different offense?
So the Hurts comparison is an interesting one because, remember, at the time when he started, when he was the starter at the beginning of 2021, they were such a pass-heavy offense for about 6 or 7 weeks, and then they finally turned it back over to, okay, we're going to lean into his rushing ability.
Yeah.
But I think that was by design.
But nobody,
I think that was with the long game in mind, right? We want Hurts to develop as a passer, get more reps, and that'll be better for us in the long run.
Yeah, but now that it has happened, nobody's saying, all right, now we're not going to run the ball anymore because we know we can pass. Like, he's developed now into such a good passer that
we're
just going to
stop running the ball. It's a more complete offense now. It's a more complete offense now because he had those reps.
But it's more complete.
The first 6 weeks of 2021.
What?
Yes.
No. It's more complete because he's developed as a passer.
How are you not seeing? Yes, he's developed as a passer in part because they said, okay, we know you can run. We'll get to that.
You think that the first six weeks where they were running an idiot offense until they realized that they had to pivot to this run-heavy system to prop him up, you think that 6 weeks is the reason that Jalen Hurts is now playing out of his mind?
I think that was a calculated decision.
I think that was an idiotic decision that was immediately fixed once they realized, you know what, this isn't going to function. We need to actually build an offense around this guy.
We're going to get Howie, and I'll talk to Howie Roseman and find out. Was that a calculated decision to be more pass-heavy early on for Hurts' long-term development, which might be, you know, a big part of why they're 12-1 this year? And the Falcons should take that same approach with Ritter.
I think that's one of the biggest reaches I've ever seen in an argument.
Well, I haven't been wrong much this year at all.
So. No, that's true.
How about the actual game? New Orleans by 4. Falcons, and, you know, Falcons usually play the Saints pretty tough, when the Falcons had a lesser team.
All four of the teams in this division are the same. They're razor thin. They're all in the same ballpark. We're that one miracle Brady comeback away from all four of them being tied at the top of this division. Every single game within this division should be a field goal either way, right? The fact that it's 4 in the favor of New Orleans when there's every chance that Atlanta just upgraded a quarterback, I'm taking the Falcons.
Just want to highlight, I do think Andy Dalton's playing pretty well this year.
Yeah.
He's playing well, and I thought that
Andy Dalton is the best quarterback in this division this year.
It's weird.
A division that features Tom Brady.
I thought the Monday night game exemplified that. He made so many good throws, and one was dropped by, was it Chris Olave, wide open on third down. That was a key play in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the seam route to Taysom Hill that got knocked out late. I mean, that to me is summing up, why is the Saints offense not as effective? Things besides Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Fumbles at the goal line by Alvin Kamara against the 49ers. Those drops and, I mean, throw for throw, Andy Dalton's playing some pretty good football. So something to keep an eye on here. As the Saints try to, have some kind of life here in the last quarter of the season. But I like Atlanta here to cover the 4. They always play the Saints pretty tough.
Yep.
All right, the last Saturday game, Coach Saturday, Indianapolis Colts at the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings by 4.
Yes.
Against Coach Saturday this Saturday.
On Saturday. So,
you get one Saturday pun like you get one Purdy pun.
No. The Saturday puns have much more shelf life than
forever.
The Purdy puns.
Can Jeff win on his namesake day?
What's the guy's name? Thor. Is it Nystrom or Nistrom?
I don't know. I'll just call him Thor.
Let's go. Okay, well, Thor. Thor pointed out that the Minnesota Vikings are aiming to become the first team to defeat a head coach on the day of his name, you know, to defeat Saturday on Saturday. And the flip side of that being Jeff Saturday is trying to become the first head coach to win a game on his namesake day. To win a game, Jeff Saturday on Saturday. So there's a lot, you know, a lot on the line in this game. In addition to just, you know, the Vikings trying to bounce back from getting beat by the Lions last week.
It's a lot on the line here.
A lot on the line.
So, Colts have been just, we thought they showed signs of life with Coach Saturday.
Yeah.
Probably not so much recently.
I mean, look, so the thing in this game to me is, Saturday funniness aside, like Minnesota's defense is just getting gashed by everybody. If they can't go to work against the Colts offense, like they have no business even being in the playoffs, let alone trying to get the number two seed or whatever.
It depends on how you classify the Vikings, but the Colts have played well and tough against maybe the two best teams in the league. They beat the Chiefs 20-17.
Yep.
And they blew a fourth quarter lead against the Eagles and only lost 17-16. If you say that the 10-win Vikings are in that boat of good team, then you could say, hey, this could be a good game. The Colts have, I mean, they also just lost 54-19 against the Cowboys. But, hey, it was 21-19 into the fourth quarter before they kept turning it over.
Like, I could see their offense their defense doing a reasonable job against Minnesota's offense. Like, that seems entirely plausible to me. It's like if their offense also has success against the Vikings' defense, then, like, Minnesota just doesn't belong in any kind of contender conversation.
There was a point early in the season where Minnesota's pass rush looked like, okay, that's – that's pretty solid.
It's right? still They're, good. It's just it doesn't good. Matter because the back end stinks.
I'm saying it hasn't been as good in recent weeks against the Lions, Jets, Patriots. I think they get back on track in this one. I think they'll be able to – I think they'll have success against the Colts offensive line here.
Yeah. I mean, even against the Lions, like Za'Darius Smith had six pressures. Like they're still getting heat. It just – it doesn't have the same effect when your secondary can't stop anybody. Like when Cameron Dansler is just getting run past for a deep bomb. Who cares what the pass rush is doing? Because the ball's gone. Minnesota, though, should get Christian Darrisaw back in this game, right as Blake Brandel wrecks his knee. There's like an MCL sprain or tear. He's out for, I think, the rest of the season anyway. Brandel was, like, he didn't do terribly in relief of Darrisaw. He gave up something like 13, 14 pressures in a few games, but like half of them were sacks. It was a weird sort of breakdown of when he lost bad, but generally held up okay. But with the last time we saw Darrisaw, now I guess the time before the last time we saw Darrisaw, he was playing like the best left tackle in the NFL. That is a significant upgrade for this Vikings offense.
All right, I mentioned how the other day the Vikings have allowed four quarterbacks to have their best grade of the season.
Yep.
That is tough to do. It doesn't sound like a lot, but we're talking about every team, every quarterback essentially is going to play 12 different teams, 17 different weeks. Right? 17 different games. And four of them had their very best against just this one team, the Vikings. If Matt Ryan can do that, he hasn't had it. His best grade's only 77 this year, again, which came against the Eagles. If Matt Ryan drops an 85 or something this week, I mean, that's certainly plausible, right? Matt Ryan against a zone-heavy defense.
It is.
Right? Doesn't that feel like a good matchup for Ryan to have a good game, unless the pass rush wins up front for Minnesota?
Yeah, but it would be, man, such an indictment of the Vikings if they can't have a good game this week against Indianapolis.
So I took Minnesota because I think, look, maybe Cousins is also, I don't want to say turned a corner either, but he's been less consistent this year than previous years.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic last week. Justin Jefferson looks absolutely unstoppable. The confidence that Cousins has when throwing to him, I like the way that pass game is going to be trending here down the stretch in Minnesota. So I'm taking Minnesota.
Last week was by far the best game we've seen from Kirk Cousins this season.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Colts keeping it within four. Because you can't. There's no way you can beat Saturday on Saturday. I mean, it wouldn't be named after him if you could.
Yeah. Maybe you should be a college coach.
Maybe, yeah.
New England Patriots.
Maybe that's how he gets the job. I'm undefeated on Saturdays.
Undefeated. I mean, Urban Meyer could be your London specialist. Undefeated in the British Isles. Urban Meyer. New England Patriots at the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders favored by one in this one.
PFF app likes the Colts as well, by the way.
Do they?
Yeah.
PFF app, which you guys should also check out. Get all your bets. Get all your fantasy advice. Get all Sam's writing. PFF app. Go check it out. Download it.
We still need to get the Fade Steve in there as the best bet of
Fade
the week.
Fade Steve bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve's pick. Take the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Patriots coming off their Monday night win against the Arizona Cardinals. Raiders coming off of yet another 13-point loss. I mean, sorry, blown lead. I mean, the biggest danger here is if the Raiders get up 13.
Yeah.
Because they're 0-4.
Yeah.
In such instances. Sure.
I'm curious. The Raiders are one of those teams where there's an obvious first thing to take away, right? Devontae Adams. And generally speaking, Bill Belichick has always been the best guy in the NFL at taking away the number one thing you bring to the table and forcing you to plan B. I don't think he's been as good at that or even has been doing it much this year. And I don't know if that's a case of like he just doesn't think he has the horses to do that anymore. And he's just playing more kind of quote unquote honest across the board and trying to win with just scheme and execution and play calling. But we're not seeing the kind of week-to-week game plans where Bill Belichick goes out of his way to assign all kinds of additional help to like an obvious number one target for an opposing team and force them to go somewhere else. Like Justin Jefferson went off against the Patriots. Justin Jefferson was just beating their corners one-on-one. Stephon Diggs was just beating their corners one-on-one. When they needed a first down, they just threw it to Stephon Diggs one-on-one against one of the Joneses. And it was working. So is he going to do the same thing and just let Devontae Adams have free reign wherever he wants to line up, wherever he wants to hit, and, you know, 15 targets later? Or is he actually going to go, no, listen, that's just, like, why would we not try and take away Devontae Adams? Let's do something here.
Devontae Adams, you know, it might feel like he hasn't had the same impact as A.J. Brown or Tyreek Hill, the three big receivers that moved. And, you know, as a team, he hasn't. But he does have Adams, 64% of the Raiders' receiving yards over the last 2 weeks, and in spectacular fashion, too. Like, we're talking a one-handed catch over Jalen Ramsey, yeah. Two you know, bombs over Jalen Ramsey. Adams, the one thing I may have predicted that was kind of true is maybe it was going to take week 8, week 9, or some middle-of-the-season turnaround for Carr and Adams to be on the same page, because they were just missing on a bunch early, just missing. And again, because Adams doesn't necessarily rely on athleticism and, you know, just out freaking everyone else, like Tyreek Hill, freak athleticism, that type of thing. Maybe that connection is getting there, but I still, you know, the Raiders are still, they need a lot more. Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro, right? Have they both been activated to practice? I don't know if they'll have any impact in this game, but yeah, they're back. They're both designated to return, which could be huge at some point, but it's kind of late for the Raiders at 5-8.
Yeah, might not be this week we get to see anything from that. A lot of injuries. Obviously, the Patriots got banged up on Monday night as well, in addition to Arizona, all the injuries they lost. So Ramondre Stevenson went down. Like, they're pretty banged up as well, and missing some key important players, including a long snapper, randomly. They went and signed another one because they might be without their long snap.
Watch out for bad snaps. Patriots pass rush has been fierce. Matthew Judon, Josh Uche has been fantastic over the last few weeks. Dietrich Wise. The other thing I just want to highlight is way back, 2009, when they played Bill Belichick versus Josh McDaniels.
2009, huh?
2009, Josh McDaniels, who knew the Patriots offense inside and out.
Yeah.
They did a good job against the Patriots offense back in 2009. Now, this is a new offense. They got a defensive coordinator running
it. Right, I bet he doesn't know it now.
He might not know it. But that's just potentially something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that the guy running it doesn't know it right now. So I'm not sure Josh McDaniels is going to have the inside scoop.
Derek Carr, despite having Devontae Adams now, on pace for his worst season from a PFF grade standpoint since 2017, statistically since around that point. I did not expect that. I did expect having his old buddy from college to elevate him a little bit, and instead we're starting to see some Carr inconsistency.
I mean, is this a version of the Matthew Stafford, Calvin Johnson thing where you're like, once you free him of the default of when in doubt, throw it to Calvin Johnson, he played better once he had to like spread it around a bit more?
Maybe.
Devontae Adams has 132 targets this year. The next highest guy is 73. He's almost got double the amount of targets of anybody else.
I still feel like not having Darren Waller, it was the thing, right? I think a top five receiving tight end might change an offense, is right up there with an A.J. Brown or a Tyreek Hill changing an offense. I think not having Waller plus Adams is one of those big things. Because if you look at Carr's career, he wasn't the same after losing Amari Cooper. Like, he was awesome with Amari Cooper. wasn't as good after they lost him. He was better when they had Henry Ruggs or Nelson Agholor. They had some kind of deep threat to kind of open things up elsewhere. A lot of Carr's success feels like it has been dependent on the receivers, which is why, theoretically, when you add Davante Adams, it should have made Carr better. And I don't know why it's having the reverse effect here, other than maybe new system and adjusting to McDaniels, first-time terminology, and all those things. But got to figure something out here down the stretch. I think Patriots pass rush might be too much for the Raiders here.
Yeah, that feels like a problem.
And Mac Jones in the offense, like little glimmers of hope on that side. So New England playing for their playoff life means a little bit more maybe for them, despite the McDaniels-Belichick matchup. So I'll take the Patriots to cover as 1-point underdogs here in Vegas.
Yeah, I think I will as well. I think I just still have more faith in them institutionally than I do with this Josh McDaniels.
Institutionally.
Yeah. Or Josh McDaniels Raiders thing.
New England Vegas versus New England New England. You're taking New England the institution.
New England, it's not mountain, is it? They're still West Coast time.
Yeah.
New England Pacific ish.
Yes. West.
Yeah.
New England West.
West ish.
All right. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Carolina Panthers. Panthers favored by 2.5. Kenny Pickett had the concussion last week. And this week in practice, it's Mason Rudolph and Mitchell Trubisky splitting reps.
Yeah, but Mike Tomlin has come out today and been talking about how, look, if Kenny Pickett's cleared, he's going to play, despite this being his second concussion in 2 months. So the NFL's fresh off this Tua controversy. Chris Nowinski, the concussion guy, I guess, if you know who Chris Nowinski is, the founder, CEO of Concussion LF, neuroscientist, author, a former WWE guy, big into the concussions and CTE and all this kind of stuff. Basically just keeps on top of all of this throughout all different sports. He's making the point that the doctor is likely to say, look, I can't find a reason not to clear you. And Tomlin is just going to default to, well, I'm not a doctor, therefore put him out there. And yet we're already kind of seeing like, that's a lot more risky than you think it is. And if he gets a third concussion in 3 months, that's very, very bad. So and my point being, there's every chance that Pickett starts this game.
Yeah, so Pickett against Darnold. 2-0 Darnold? Did they win last week? No, they lost. No, they won. Yeah, 2-0 Darnold. Remember the stat?
I do.
So, I mean, that's a stat that you have to embrace. Sam Darnold's 5-0.
So he's got one more game
in his first three games of the last two seasons.
Yeah.
When it's the first three games of Sam Darnold's season, the dude's undefeated.
Uh-huh.
Find someone else who's done that.
So this is his last game, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. It's one more win for Darnold. What did I take here?
Alternatively, it could be Mason Rudolph against Darnold from that draft class.
That is that draft class, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
the guy we never talk about from that draft class because he had a shot, stank, and then got sat in the depth chart again.
I mean, I saw a Pittsburgh beat writer comparing the first few games of Rudolph to the first few games of Pickett.
Oh, Pickett.
Rudolph's are better.
Sure, yeah.
But like Rudolph, it's like, he's done.
Yeah.
Had your shot, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Pickett, it's like, just give him time.
Yeah, because, you know,
first round pedigree. Yeah. The guy needs time. So I'm flipping to Carolina. Sorry, this is the one time I'm going to flip my pick. I got to go. Sam Darnold's hot.
Oh, because of the stat.
Yes,
right.
The stat. Carolina's run game was really effective last week. Pittsburgh's run defense struggled against the Ravens. So, yeah, Carolina getting that defense going and everything.
All right. I'm picking the Steelers. I think they're going to be able to stop Carolina's run game in a way that Seattle wasn't, at which point Darnold's actually going to have to do the stuff and win the game himself, and that's not going to happen.
What do you think of Rudolph getting snaps?
Oh, no. Jeez, look what just happened.
How did that happen? All right, no more close-ups. I just wow. Knocked a curl out of place.
The curls just...
It's tough to get it back.
They just
now.
Broke loose.
It's tough to get it back.
Yeah.
What side am I on
here?
Oh,
man. Can we have a makeup artist on standby? Somebody text Ashbrock, get that lady in here, whatever her name is. Yeah. Fix it quick.
She taught us how to...
Repair your own curls?
She helped me. I had issues. Yeah. She helped me with my skin.
What were you asking before you made
Why is Rudolph getting snaps instead of Trubisky?
Because apparently Deontay Johnson wants him to.
What was his quote? He didn't say that.
He just talked about how it's his time. it's Mason's time. He's put in the hard work. It's, you know, it's time to see what he can do on Sunday.
Who's a better third string quarterback, Mason Rudolph or Nick Foles?
Foles.
I mean, those two dudes have been sitting there as third string there the entire season.
Yeah, right? But Foles, there's a chance that at any given day he can go off for like a Super Bowl defining game.
Those guys should be backups.
I don't think there's that chance for Rudolph.
They should be backups. Those are QB2s.
Foles could be a backup. I mean, Foles would be one of the better backups in the NFL, I think.
Rudolph's not bad.
He's no Nick Foles.
Well, we'll see what happens at quarterback. I'll take Carolina, giving 2.5 regardless here.
I'm taking Pittsburgh.
And Philadelphia Eagles at the Chicago Bears. Eagles favored by 9. Bears coming off of their bye. Eagles are so much better than the Bears. 9 points here in Chicago.
Wow. You just went straight to that, huh?
I mean, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, what did they beat the Giants by? Like 20-something?
Do the Bears treat this as their Super Bowl, though?
Well, look, the difference between the Bears and the Giants, other than the record, is that...
is not much?
Well, it's no. Justin Fields makes that offense a nightmare to defend for anybody. Like, as much as Danny Dimes is freakishly athletic relative to what he looks like, Justin Fields is just freakishly athletic, period. Like, not relative to, you know, any looks. He's just absurdly athletic, and that makes that offense an absolute nightmare for any defense to match up with. And okay, Philadelphia has a very good defense, but Chicago's offensive line is vastly improved from earlier in the year. They run block very well. They should be able to run the ball. Justin Fields can make a couple of special plays here or there, at which point their offense, you know, might have a degree of success. Now, the problem comes on the other side of the ball, where Chicago's defense is bad and Philadelphia's offense is very good, at which point it's hard to see how they keep it within 9.
Chicago should get Jaquan Brisker back, though.
Oh, right? That changes everything.
It changes everything. The rookie safety. Yeah, I mean, Chicago's, they don't have great talent on the defensive side of the ball, and they're very much hurt. So that's going to be a struggle against the Eagles. One thing I just want to highlight about the Eagles, I think they are, look, I think it's tough to have just pure football axioms, right? We talk a lot about them, you know, is coverage more important than pass rush or whatever. But to me, the Eagles are always just this perfect example of the pass rush coverage debate, and just like when the Eagles are a Super Bowl contender, it's not necessarily because of their pass rush. It's because of what they do on the back end. It is because of their coverage unit. The Eagles have had a top three pass rush, 8 straight years. Like every year that I can remember since 2015, maybe one year they weren't that good. Every year they have a good pass rush. They got 8 pass rushers. That's true again this year. The difference is Darius Slay and James Bradbury, the whole unit, right? They're the only team in the NFL allowing negative EPA, expected points added, on 10-plus yard throws. They've got the number 3 overall coverage grade in the NFL. That is the same thing that happened in 2017, right? So the one constant in Philadelphia for about 8 or 9 years, multiple regimes as far as coaching goes, always have a great pass rush, top 3, top 5. 2017, they had one of the top coverage units in the NFL. Same thing this year. I mean, to me, that's of the many things that separate the Eagles this year, that's one of them, and one of the big reasons why they're, you know, the top team in the NFC. Yep. They're so good across the board.
No, they are. I mean, they've got 2 cornerbacks that rank in the top 10 or whatever in terms of all the relevant metrics and grade. They are – the defense is great. I think that's going to be the difference because Chicago's is not.
Yeah, so I think – I'll take the Eagles to cover the 9. Obviously, I think the Fields aspect here, it's going to be how he – you know, if he has those superhuman plays – to keep them in it.
Yep.
The other thing is the Eagles' run defense is not good. With Jordan Davis, without Jordan Davis, with Ndamukong Suh, they were a little bit better a couple weeks ago with Suh and Joseph, but they had like 1 or 2 good games in there. The Eagles' run defense might, you know, the Bears might be able to have some success there.
I feel like, so that's now they've got...
designed runs, not just field scrambling.
Now they've got Jordan Davis back, but because they've signed Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph in particular, it seems like Joseph is punting Jordan Davis out to a wider alignment when they play. So there's all these snaps now where Linval Joseph is the nose tackle and Jordan Davis is being kicked out to like a 3-tech, and it's making both positions worse. Like Jordan Davis isn't great at that alignment and Linval Joseph is just old and 1,000,000 pounds. Like I was sending you the pictures.
Yeah.
There's all 22 views from like behind the line from Philadelphia's point of view. Linval Joseph is making Jordan Davis, who was what? A slimmed down 348 pounds, look small.
Yeah.
Like Linval Joseph right now is looking like late career Grady Jackson for the Lions, where he used to take up two gaps by himself and they would run the ball up the middle. And his like plan was to like line up in the 3-point stance and then just stand up and lean forward. And that's the A gaps taken care of. Like, that's what Linval Joseph is starting to look like, only it's not working. Like, he's just not generating anything. So I honestly, as much as Linval Joseph has been a great player, I sit him down for Jordan Davis.
I would put, yeah, Davis, he's still working his way back for injury. You could tell he was hurt 2 weeks ago when he came back. He's been limited snap-wise as well. But, yeah, I'd throw Jordan Davis back in at nose tackle. Linval's got a 45.9 grade since joining the Eagles. Are we both taking the Eagles here?
Yeah.
You say? All right, four more games to discuss. We're on pace.
Yeah.
Doing great. Like, we're done early, maybe.
I mean, look, let's not count
the chickens. Stop early. Tell stories.
Yeah.
Dallas Cowboys at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Cowboys favored by 4 here. Trevor Lawrence didn't practice yesterday, but he should be okay to go.
That's because his knee got, like, you know, bent
back. A toe injury, apparently. Something different.
No, something different.
Yeah.
Jacksonville, I think, has the single most one-dimensional offensive line in the NFL. They rank, like, top 5 in pass protection metrics and stats and grade. They're pretty high, but they have the worst run-blocking line in the league. They're even worse than Tennessee, grade-wise. So they are actually a pretty good pass-blocking unit, but now they're going up against Dallas, who I think has the best pass-rushing unit in the NFL. We've seen Micah Parsons basically single-handedly hand the first sack or two to every elite left tackle that he goes up against. He's a wrecking machine. The Dallas pass rush across the board is very good. They complicate it by running stunts and blitzes in a way some of these other elite pass rushes don't. So they just generally make your life an absolute freaking nightmare from a pass blocking standpoint. That's the kind of thing that can undo the development of Trevor Lawrence in a hurry.
Yeah, Lawrence has been outstanding these last few weeks. We've highlighted that a few times, just his little run outside of the Lions game when he did get hurt halfway through. Lawrence has been awesome, looking like the number one overall pick. Speaking of the number one overall pick, Trayvon Walker's day-to-day. He's banged up for the Jaguars, coming off of his big strip sack last week. I'm looking at Dallas in this game as they're not going to sleepwalk through this one like they did with the Texans.
Right.
Right. You're going on the road and the whole thing, but I think they're gonna look at how Jacksonville's played the last few weeks, what Lawrence is doing, and say, okay, we can't do this again. Is this their third straight game against the AFC South? Colts, Texans, then the Jags. This one's gonna look closer to the Colts game, I think. Right? They're coming off that game, they score 54 points, they muff a punt, and there's turnovers in Dallas territory that kind of keep the Texans in it. I don't think we're gonna see that in this one. Cowboys roll, cover the 4.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game where, like, at this point, Dallas doesn't have any excuses to not take the Jags seriously. Like, we've seen the last few weeks, Jacksonville is absolutely capable of doing some damage, whether it's with Trevor Lawrence, whether it's with the receivers, whether it's with their running backs. They can make an impact, and, you know, you could be entirely forgiven if you're Dallas for not even thinking that Houston has anything to bring to the table and we can just go in there. Maybe we need a game plan for this. Let's just rock up, beat the Texans, go home. I don't think they are under the same illusion if they were this week. Like, you have to know that Jacksonville can actually be dangerous and you need to bring everything you have to the table. But if they do that, I think they're significantly better and they should be able to disrupt the biggest area of strength for Jacksonville, which plays into their hands even more.
The Jags offensive line that you highlighted is a really interesting dynamic because the discrepancy there, they're 4th in pass blocking grade, 3rd worst in run blocking grade. But even like the player, like Cam Robinson, if you said that years ago, he's going to be, this is his best year in pass protection grade wise, but still below average again as a run blocker. Juwan Taylor, when he was drafted, he was supposed to be the opposite, right? Mauling run blocker who had some issues in pass pro. They've both been far better in pass protection than they are in the run game. That's been kind of like the story of the Jags. So it's good for Lawrence and his development, but maybe not good for the versatility of the entire offense there in Jacksonville. So Dallas, we still see them as dangerous as any NFC team. So how do you package last week's game against the Texans, right? With Dallas is trending up and they got the pass rush and the coverage unit and the pass offense and they're all phases. they're as dangerous as any team in the NFC, but they weren't nearly as impressive as, say, the 49ers or the Eagles, these two teams last week who dominated, that the Cowboys were put into that same kind of tier. Are they still in that tier? Does the Texans game change any of that for you with the Cowboys?
No. I mean, I think you go back the week before and they, okay, it took a while to happen, but they ended up hanging 50 on the Colts on Coach Saturday. So I don't think last week means anything, really. Like, it's a closer game than it should have been. They squeaked by. They ended up having to do it the hard way, but they won. These games happen. Like, they happen to every team. The Eagles have had games where they didn't roll. And one was against Houston. Okay, they ended up winning by 13 or 14 or whatever.
One was against the Colts. They only won by one.
Right, but
beat by 100.
Yeah, the point being, like, the Eagles have had games that have been a grind when we expected them to absolutely roll. Like, they beat the Cardinals by 3 points earlier in the season.
Good. I'm asking you if you want to overreact. You said no. That's
no,
the right answer.
I'm not.
One other quick story. Terrence Steele out for the season, starting right tackle for the Cowboys. Jason Peters and Josh
Ball.
Josh Ball. I doubted myself for a second. I was going to say that. Former Marshall tackle. They're going to be filling in at right tackle. Could this be really bad for Jason Peters and the Cowboys, moving a 20-year left tackle to the right side?
I mean, look, I don't know. I do know that there are people that feel very strongly about this. Not, you know, moving guys from one side of the line to the other ever, but taking a guy that's only played in the left side and has done so for 15 years and then saying, all right, you got a week and a half to get yourself up to speed. You need you to go to the other side. The last time I think we saw that was Donald Penn. And
It was the great.
Almost immediately.
It was the great Alejandro Villanueva.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that didn't go much better
either. Before that was Donald Penn.
Donald Penn, the point being the Penn almost immediately, like, ruptured something significant. I can't remember what his injury was, but he, like, a couple of weeks, like, straight away, boom, done. Basically a career ender for him. So, you know, there are people out there that are like, look, you've spent 15 years building up the biomechanics of moving in one direction at 330-plus pounds, and now you're going to ask a guy to reverse all of that. Like, you can't do it. There's just the tissues, the you know, the ligaments, the tendons, everything in your body is not built for doing that for the last 15 years. It's one thing if you're taking a guy who's never, you know, doesn't have the sort of inbuilt, entrenched muscle memory and everything else that comes with that and asking him to flip. It's another thing entirely if you're asking a guy like Jason Peters. But that could be, you know, old wives' tale bullshit. Who knows?
I mean, I would lean toward – I believe when you talk about flipping a guy at draft time, completely overrated. Guys move from left to right tackle, from college to the NFL, within college, all the time. Very common. But I think the anecdotal evidence that you bring to the table, Donald Penn, Alejandro Villanueva, maybe Michael Orr at various times in his career. But, like, when you're 7-8 year veterans or later, I think that's really risky for Peters personally and for the Cowboys, right? He could look terrible there. Like, even Penei Sewell had 6 weeks of adjustment, and that was just after, you know, 3 years of playing left tackle, essentially, at Oregon. So that's where this could be risky for the Cowboys. I'm not saying they have great other options than Jason Peters, you know, first-time right tackle, or Josh Ball, mid-round pick. But I'm just saying it could go poorly.
I mean, look, as I said, I'm not a doctor, but I 100% buy into the concept. Yeah, I absolutely buy into the concept that if you've done one thing for like 15 straight years and then flip sides, your body's not going to like that. It just isn't, right? Particularly if you're already old as hell, you know? Like, maybe if you're 24 and you do it, your body's just young enough where it can deal with that kind of crap.
Peters is our age.
Right. But if you're 40 and you suddenly try and reverse everything that you've been doing for the last 15 years, I can't imagine that those same parts of your body are able to handle that the same way. They just can't be. So, and I don't think, like, a week is enough time to make that happen. Like, maybe if you said, hey, Jason, next year we're going to need you to play right tackle. If you could start getting the reps in now to build up that side of your body so that week one, 2023, we're good to roll. Okay, I can buy that. But I think asking him to do it now, again, who knows? This might be just inventing stuff that isn't a thing. But medically, that doesn't feel smart to me.
Jason Peters and I are in the same draft class, 2004. He's over here trying something new.
Please maybe tell me he was drafted in baseball.
No, but he was undrafted in football.
Okay.
Jason Peters and I, neither of us have been drafted.
At all.
Yeah. Baseball or football. Basically the same guy. And here we are.
Have you checked that he 40, wasn't drafted in baseball?
Here we are at 40 years old trying something new. He's going to go try to play right tackle. I'm going to try some rugby skills. Are. You know?
Well, so, medically, I think it has the same kind of risk associated with it.
Yeah, my risk might be a little bit more since, you know,
yeah,
he's still playing at a high level. Anyway, we spent more time on that. Now we're losing pace.
Damn it.
We're both taking Dallas to cover the four against the Jaguars here. This could be a statement game. We could come back, though. Monday morning, Trevor Lawrence balls out again against the Super Bowl potentially bound Cowboys. This could be the narrative changer for Trevor Lawrence. Get ready. Arizona Cardinals at the Denver Broncos. Broncos by 2.5. Russell Wilson in concussion protocol. Yeah. Sounds like he's trending to play. See what happens. But if he doesn't play, it's Colt McCoy versus Brett Rypien.
God. Like,
I mean, even if it's Colt McCoy versus Russell Wilson.
Yeah. I mean, the potential options here are Colt McCoy, Brett Rypien, and Russell Wilson. And the amazing thing is it's not clear that Russell Wilson would be the best quarterback of that group based off this season. I mean, I think he probably would, but it isn't like it's not as clear as you think it should be based off previous points of evidence.
It's the disappointment bowl.
Yeah, it is. I guess at this point, what you're looking for Denver is, can we just build on the offense finally showing some signs of life against Kansas City? Like, things started to work there. Okay, not enough because your defense gave up some plays and you still lost, but you know, if we can do that again against a worse team, we might get a win here or there. We might put up 30 points, you know? Wouldn't that be nice?
I told you before the show, before the game last week, Russ is playing better.
Yeah.
He's playing better.
Still not, you know, well.
He's playing better. That's it.
I'm just saying, can you imagine, you know, if we finish the season with 30 points on the board once? Wouldn't that be sweet?
Yeah.
I think that's what Denver have to be looking for, you know?
That's what they're
I've seen other teams out there with a 3 to begin their point score total. That'd be nice.
Should be able to do it maybe against this Arizona defense.
That's what I'm saying.
I enjoy watching Colt McCoy play because I wanted to watch Kellen Moore play more NFL football. Because I really wanted to see the well below average arm and see how long it can operate in the NFL. And like Monday night, you kind of saw that with Colt McCoy. Like early in the game, it's like, dude, wow, look how quickly he gets rid of the ball. The anticipation is incredible. But if he doesn't play with pristine anticipation or he doesn't have the guy open early enough that he can get rid of the ball that early, Colt McCoy is going to hold the ball, take a sack, or just try to throw it into a tight window and not have a chance. Like the margin for error for a Colt McCoy with his level of arm strength is so tiny. But it's always a fascinating watch for me to see if he can overcome that with everything else that quarterbacks need to be good at.
He's also reached the age now where it's like, in addition to not having great tools when you started, they're probably declining. Like in the Mike Leach tributes that were going around, there were a ton of images of that famous play where Texas Tech knocked off Texas. Michael Crabtree, you know, the last second pass to the far right corner. He ends up avoiding a tackle, tiptoes along the sideline, touchdown, game winner, walk off, blah, blah, blah. Colt McCoy was the quarterback on the other sideline for Texas in that game. Like, that's a long time ago now, you know? Michael Crabtree, for example, who made the play, has been retired for years. And Colt McCoy's still out here trying to convince people that he can play quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago. That's the thing. Like, it's like the Matt Cassel thing. You know, how many years has that guy been sitting on the sideline where we just assumed he's the same dude? Probably not, you know.
Taking Denver to cover the 2.5 here. I think if there's something to watch here, Patrick Surtain and DeAndre Hopkins,
sure,
when they play football against each other.
Yeah.
That's something to watch for. Other than that.
I mean, Jerry Jeudy got his mojo going.
Jeudy also is fascinating, right? I mean, again, let's not spend too much time on this, but when Russ came to Denver, the appeal was supposed to be Jeudy and
Cortland Sutton.
Tim Patrick before he got hurt and the whole thing. That's still going to be there next year, right? Those guys that could still be good. That was supposed to be part of the appeal, but Jeudy maybe taking his next step here in his development could be something for Broncos fans to hang their hat on heading into 23. There's not much else. But I think they'll cover this 2.5.
Yes, I agree that Denver will cover the 2.5.
Kansas City Chiefs at the Houston Texans. Chiefs by 14, and the Texans have none of their good players playing. It's only 14.
I am amazed that this is only 14. I would have bought anything up to like 21.
Remember early in the season I said the league feels more hectic this year because all the good teams played each other early. The Chiefs played, well, we thought that the Bucs would be good, but they played the Bucs. The Chiefs played the Chargers right away, right? That big division battle. Who else did they play early? You can easily look at their schedule, right? But weren't the Chiefs, they were 3-1 and whatever. There was a lot of good teams beating up on each other early on. It's because they saved these games for the end.
Yeah.
Is my point. Right? It felt like the NFL had a lot of good on good. Like the Chiefs played the Bucs in week 4, the Bills in week 6, the Niners in week 7. Like before the season, you're looking at those games and saying, okay, those are all some of the best teams in the league, right? So the NFL scheduled a lot of good on good and then bad on bad, right? The Giants were playing the Bears and like all the bad team, like the bad versus bad games were early, so some bad teams had good records, like the Giants,
yeah.
And the good versus good teams played each other, so some good teams had bad records, and then at the end of the game, you get the bad versus good games.
I mean,
Chiefs versus Texans.
Yeah, Kansas City also just played the Bengals 2 weeks ago. And they've got two games against Denver, who we thought would be really good.
Don't debunk my feelings with facts.
They've got the Raiders at the last. They've got Seattle, who it turns out are actually reasonably. Like, this is just their one stinking
game. But I'm saying before the game, before the season, when you're looking at the schedule before the season, yeah, you thought the two Broncos games would be good.
Yeah.
So but that's, not Texans or Seahawks.
No, we thought the Raiders would be. So that's 3 of their last 5 games were in-division games against teams that were supposed to be playing.
But I'm talking like pinnacle. The Chiefs, Bucks, and Chiefs, Bills are 2 of the.
And the Bengals. So 4 out of 6 to finish their year were supposed to be good games.
There were other games.
This is a terrible point. And the Rams, 5 out of 7. Shut up. This is a ridiculous point you're making. The Chargers. Like, no. You've just zeroed in on the one crappy game.
They just happen to have a tough schedule.
And you're like, wow, this is just a failure of schedule, mate.
Rams-Bills week 1. Right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be one of the best games of the entire season.
Right. You've just zeroed in on, like, the one bad game in Kansas City schedule. And you're like, well, this is just a failing of schedule making.
All right, so what do you think of the game?
I think Kansas City are very good. I think the Texans are bad, and all of their good players are hurt. They're going to get waxed by 21 points.
What else do we have here? Who else is not playing?
The dual quarterbacks of
the
Jeff
dual
Driscoll
quarterbacks of yeah,
Davis Mills.
That could be something. Could be something there.
I'm sure what the hell.
No Damian Pierce. You can't even, you know, if Damian Pierce was playing, you'd say, hey, maybe the Texans can run Pierce and, you know, lean on him a little bit, steal some possessions. Can't even do that.
No.
With Pierce. Or Cooks or anything.
No, Cooks is out. Nico Collins also out. Like, they just got nobody left.
So some original analysis.
Also, by the way, Chris Jones against Kenyon Green on the interior. Like, this is a disaster.
Let me tell you what the underdog can do to keep it close in this game. They're going to need to need some turnovers.
Yeah.
And maybe a great special teams play.
And a comet striking the stadium.
Perhaps a comet.
Causing an abandonment of the game when they're only down 14.
It's also Mahomes in a dome. And anytime you get Mahomes in a dome, I'm just thinking he's just going to go nuts.
Yeah.
Not miss a throw. 80, because Mahomes is awesome. Remember, I got obligated to say this. Mahomes is the best quarterback. He's the MVP.
Uh-huh.
He's the best QB in the NFL. So the Chiefs are going to win by 100.
Yeah. I mean, literally, when I saw the injury list for Houston, I couldn't believe that the line was only 14.
Yeah, I really thought we were going to get close to that 20 mark.
Yeah.
I'll take KC to cover the 14.
Yes.
All right. Did we list all the games? We did. There's 16 in there.
Yeah.
Haven't missed anything. Rams at the Packers. Monday night football. Okay, the NFL thought this was going to be a big game.
Yeah. I mean, you can understand why. Defending Super Bowl champions, back-to-back MVP Aaron Rodgers. It made sense.
The other disappointment bowl. Packers by 7. And Baker Mayfield. So the two things to watch are Baker Mayfield, and then to me, you know, got Christian Watson, and Jalen Ramsey, when they ever match up,
that'll be fun.
Christian Watson, I do believe, has transformed this Packers offense. They're coming off their bye. What are they, 5-8? Still have some playoff hopes.
Yeah, Rams offensive line has been ticking up the last couple weeks as well. They haven't even really gotten that much consistency in terms of. Starters, like, they've still been moving around a little bit. I think one of those weeks was the first week where they had the same 5 back-to-back games, but the line has been playing a little bit better in recent weeks. I mean, the most fascinating thing is was that just a one game trick for Baker Mayfield? Does he get immediately worse once he knows the playbook? Like, how's that whole dynamic going to work? Because what he did was genuinely impressive. I mean, simply functioning as a quarterback in the offense 48 hours after getting the gig is pretty amazing. Leading a game-winning drive when you have to do the whole thing 98 yards, you know, ad-libbing as you go, was nuts. Making the throws when you needed to, the Skowronek play down the sideline, the final one to Van Jefferson, like just an incredible performance from Baker Mayfield given the circumstances. But was that a one, like, was that it? Or is this actually a thing? Teaming up Baker Mayfield with some really smart offensive coaches, at least three of them still in the building.
Zach, Liam, and Sean.
Right. Is Liam still there or did he just bounce immediately?
Well, I think he's still in the building.
Yeah. So like three really smart offensive coaches, like who liked, I think all three of them liked Baker Mayfield when he came out, you know, as a prospect. Like, can that actually produce something successful?
Yes, so that is a good storyline, man. It is something to actually watch here. Baker Mayfield, talented, and looking like a disaster in Carolina. And for half of a quarter in the fourth quarter against the Raiders, looked pretty good.
You put it like that, that's quite a small amount of time.
It is. But that's what we're working off of. Yeah. Can they turn around Baker Mayfield? And then the Packers offense, they've scored at least 28, three out of their last four games. You know, again, the Christian Watson factor, I think, has changed things for them. For the Packers to make a playoff push here, they're not eliminated, obviously, but they're 5-8. If they win out, they'll be 9-8.
Yep.
So they're looking at the teams ahead of them to not get to 9 wins. Who are the wild card teams ahead of them? Well, the Cowboys already have 10, so you can't chase the Cowboys, right? You can't beat them.
Yeah.
The two teams that are in the playoffs right now are the Commanders and the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They're both 7-5-1. So you're banking on the Commanders, four teams who are ahead of the Packers can't get to 9 wins. Two out of the four cannot get to 9 wins. Commanders, who have 7, Giants have 7, Seahawks are 7-6, and the Lions are 6-7.
Mm-hmm.
So all four of those teams, Packers need to win out, and three out of those four teams cannot get to 9 wins.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Two of whom are playing each other this weekend.
Yeah, they could tie again.
It feels, you know, the way a tie is supposed to be half a win? If you get two of them, you should be able to parlay it into a win.
You should.
You know?
Yeah, it does.
I've got two ties. That's worth a win. So instead of being 7-5-2, I just go to 8-5.
Is that what they do?
No.
No, because they're the winning. They do count it as half a win, huh? 7-5-1.
But only as like a tiebreaker.
0.5.
Like, I think it remains half a win.
But that's actually how they calculate the win percentage. Like, the Commanders and Giants have a 577 win percentage, which is 7.5 divided by the 13 games that they play.
It probably stays as another half a win in win percentage terms, but I don't think it does you
anything. Yeah, so if they tie, they'll both be 7-5-2,
yeah,
which would be the equivalent of 8-5.
Except versus an 8-5 team, I think. I'm pretty sure an 8-5 team would still have the tiebreaker.
I'm sure a real win counts more than two ties.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're NFL experts here. We should definitely know this stuff.
I mean, look, that's the thing that I'm just never going to look into that before it happens.
No, my favorite show of the year is Week 18 preview, where I just get to read off the scenarios, get to play Andrew Siciliano and just read the scenarios.
Yeah.
If these 19 things happen, the Raiders could get into the playoffs. I mean, you never know.
We're all looking forward to that.
You never know. Anything else to keep an eye on in this game? One loss for the Packers, by the way. And is it Jordan Love time? What happens? By the way, for the Packers, if they were going to win out here, they get the Rams at the Dolphins. Rodgers on Christmas Day. Rodgers doesn't play well in Florida.
Florida. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Because remember the Saints had to play in Jacksonville last year and they lost by 1 million?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not good in Florida.
Just based on that one game? Or like
no, there was other games leading up to it. I think that's what the Saints, like...
They knew that.
Yeah. They're like, we can play in Mobile, Alabama. We can play in... go to Jacksonville. It's terrible in Florida.
We need the game to move to Florida.
They got the Rams at the Dolphins, home against the Vikings, home against the Lions. 3 out of 4 here in Lambeau down the stretch for playoff football, and then one in Miami. Christmas Day.
Not the easiest stretch in the world.
Nope.
On the other hand, those are all teams you kind of need to win if you want to win playoff games.
Yeah, they're all doable. And I'm saying all this knowing that the Packers are 2-7 in their last 9 games. That's another perspective here to bring to the table.
Yeah, it's not good.
With a win against the Cowboys and the Bears.
Yeah.
All right.
a Bears game where they were losing for a lot of it.
Someone's questioning me calling a yard subjective. Okay.
That's an maybe email. Stop reading.
It's a long email.
We're not reading emails live on the show.
It's a long email, but
pre-screening
right.
It.
Oh, geez. What did we do here?
You lost your spreadsheet again?
I've been invited to a meeting. I want to know what it's about.
Okay. These are all things that can happen after we stop recording a podcast.
Game's over. Show's over. Taking the Packers to cover the 7. The Baker story was good for half of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I feel like that's actually how it's going to work, is that the Baker's going to go back into a pumpkin at this point, and the Packers will win big.
So there you go. We previewed all 16 games.
Yeah,
we did it.
Record time.
Yeah. We get to our meeting now.
This is like under 2 hours.
Yeah, why'd we go so fast?
By a distance.
Maybe it is doable. It is.
Maybe.
Our fans are going to be so upset.
We do this every week.
You didn't talk about my game. You didn't talk enough about
we hit them
the left guard for the Ravens this week.
Covered every game.
Well, thanks to everybody for tuning in. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
We're done early.
Let's go.
Next week, regular recording schedule? Regular recording schedule.
Yeah.
I also want to highlight Christmas. So Christmas weekend.
Yeah.
All the games are on New Year's Christmas Eve.
Right.
There's 3 games on Christmas, which is that Sunday.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our podcast still on that Monday morning.
Yeah.
So it won't be the day after the slew of games. It'll be 2 days after this.
Yes. It'll be the Monday as per usual.
Yes. Just highlighting that I will not be doing a Christmas morning show.
No.
Like live from the kids opening presents and stuff.
Right.
We're not doing that.
Correct.
So there's no schedule changes for us over the next couple weeks.
No.
That's it. Just wanted to make sure people know. And go watch me play rugby if you want to donate.
We can't watch you yet. They have to donate first.
Donate first, and then we'll do it. All right, that's it. Let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Monday morning as we review all the Week 15 action.